Accession number 30403, Mr. Andre Codin, Real Free. Now, we're talking about the sort of activities you were doing, you know, with the Germans in situ and a lot of informers and sympathisers and the rest of it. Now, were you picked on at all? I mean, did anyone... you said you had trouble because of the way you were dressed. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, there were chaps, a couple of chaps, there were just about two or three, who knew me from before, who themselves had been in the Social Democratic Youth Movement, who then switched over to the Hitler Youth. And one of them saw me on the street dressed like that, and he called out to me. I had a nickname, and they continued calling me for that, because I was a bit of a footballer, right? And you don't use the word nowadays now, but I played as a centre forward, right? And when I took a kick at a goal, I had a habit, in some instances, very often, to shout, boom, and kick the ball, and it was a goal. And when I didn't shout boom and kick the ball, it wasn't a goal. Now, people noticed that, and they started calling me Bummy. Right? And they said, hey, Bummy, don't let me see you like that again. Yeah, take that white socks off. They've got a special name in Austria, right? Take them off. Don't go dressed like that, right?
Now, why not? Just explain for them.
Because the Hitler Youth.
And you weren't Hitler Youth.
That was the Hitler Youth. The Hitler Youth wore white stockings, right?
So how did you react to that?
Well, I tell you what I did. I came home, told my mum, and my mother said, you know, funny that you say that. There have been a group of Hitler Youth standing around our building, because our building where we then lived was a high building, and next to it there was a baker, a low shop, you know. And from our window you looked out and you could see all the surrounding. And said, and I wondered what these Hitler Youth were doing here. They were standing round the house.
Now, had you had this ex-member...
And, well, what happened was that my mother, she was wise enough. She said, you're not going to sleep here for the next night, right? Until these buggers vanish. And she contacted the son of a boss where she used to do sewing machine work. And he lived in another district. He was a Jewish bloke, and asked them if they could put me up for a while. Right? She explained it. And they said yes, and I went over there, and they put me up for about 6 weeks until my mother came round and said, it's all right, they've gone.
And you think...
But I stopped wearing white socks.
You think that your ex-friend had reported you to the Hitler Youth? Or?
Yes, yes. Because he was the one who stopped me on the street. And they wouldn't know about me.
So, anything else happening in this time?
Well, I stayed with these people, and very tragically, but I don't want to get up and go there, otherwise I could show you. I found a list of about 1,300 Austrian, Czech, and some German refugees who were trying to get away down the Danube in an old fishing boat, a couple of fishing boats, down the Danube to the Black Sea and join a ship there and attempt illegally to make their way to Palestine. And they were...
So these were all Czechoslovakian Jews, essentially, but Austrian...
No, they were Austrian Jews, Czech Jews, and they were in the majority were Austrian Jews.
Now, did you join these? How did
you
get this list?
No, you don't understand, because I found a list of that. because the Germans made a list of them in Yugoslavia before they executed them and chucked them in the Danube River. And I came across that list and the report.
When?
Oh, after the war.
So what happened at the time? Did you know about this massacre at the time?
No, I didn't.
Right. So what happened next to you at the time? Keep it to the time.
The reason I mention this is because the person who put me up, sheltered me for 6 weeks, he's on that list.
So he was later on murdered. So what happened next to you? You stayed with these friends.
Well,
you
I stayed,
working.
And in July of that month, a friend of mine, as a matter of fact, the brother of this lad here, who I told you we were having a farewell party, he phoned me. He contacted me. Now that's his fiance. She played the piano and beautifully. And after Hitler came, etc., she and I earned a little bit of money by giving concerts to private parties, which it still took, under these circumstances, you're surprised it still happened. People went on with their lives.
Now, I didn't. What instrument did you play?
I didn't. I sang. I had a good voice.
So, what sort of music was it? Classical. Oh,
entertaining. Viennese music, And
light opera.
Light opera, yes, and Viennese songs, and it's.
So that earned you a little bit of money.
Yeah, and she was his fiancée. But she was like a sister to me. People used to say to him, Mothy, Trudy is kissing Bummy all the time. He contacted me and he said, do you want to come along with us? We are going to try and get to Switzerland illegally. And I said, yeah. My father, in the meantime, was in Poland, right? And my mother and I, we were thinking, well, what to do? And I mentioned it to her. My mother said, you try again.
What was she going to do, though? She wasn't going to come with you.
Huh?
She wasn't going to come
with you. Oh, no. She wasn't. She wasn't in the state to be as active as that. And she did go illegally afterwards.
We'll come to that.
She joined my father in Poland.
So what happened to you there?
Did
you
and just... what we did, to make it short, we then fitted ourselves out, right?
Now, how did you prepare?
Well, we just took a bag and a toothbrush and I took a comb and a pair of spare socks and to fit into a small bag. And we took that and went like wandering, pretending to do we are wandering in the mountains, right? Went to the Swiss border, and in the evening we got across there, and
how?
We went quite a distance inside, and when we were picked up by the frontier police.
The Swiss frontier police.
Swiss.
Now this was July. When was it?
July 38. And what these bastards did with us, I shall never forget. And because the Swiss haven't changed. And it was night. They put us to a frontier post, and they put us in a room with a concrete floor, no chairs, no palliasses, nothing at all. Not a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, nothing at all. And they told us to sit. We sat on the floor, standing up, and so then finally
was
we
it just
sat
the
down.
Three of you?
Huh? The three of us.
This girl, her
girl,
boyfriend, and
her fiancé and myself. And they kept us in the morning, till the morning. In the meantime, they had contacted the Austrian Flanders police, right? And then they called us out, and we didn't even have a chance to have a piss or a shit. And they took us to the frontier and they handed us over. That's the Swiss did that. Now they took us, I don't say Germans, although they were now in German uniform, they were Austrians. They took us back to their headquarters, right? And a superior officer came in and he told the girl to go. And he kept him and me. And on the way in, we had seen a park, right? And Otty there, he thought, well, if they let her go, I suppose they're going to give us a hiding and then let us go, right? He called out to her, Trudy, wait in the park for us, right? And she left, but they didn't let us go. They kept us over the night, right? In the same way also, but there it was a room, also concrete floor, but it had a concrete ledge, and we used that to sit on.
Now, where was this police station? Is it?
It was in the Tyrol. In the Tyrol. I don't know which town it was, because we just pissed off again afterwards. Well, what happened was that we were sitting there, and the superior officer came in with our papers, you know, that made a file, and papers, and he was reading, etc. And I was sitting, and I was humming, without knowing it, I was humming, not being aware of it on purpose, I was humming a melody that my good father had brought back from Spain, that used to be sung, that he learned from the anarchist Galician miners, the tin miners from northwest Spain. You know, when they came marching, they sang that song. It was a revolutionary song. And I hummed it because I learned the melody from my father. And that officer, that CID man, he suddenly perked at them. They turned to me. He said, where do you know that song from? And by that time, I was cheeky enough. I was bloody cheeky by nature. And I said to him, I thought, well, if he knows the song, if he knows the melody, I said, well, it's a melody I learned from my dad. He brought it back from Spain, where he was fighting your friends. Huh? And he looked at me and they left. And then he said, okay, well, I'll see you later. And he came back later and said, look, come here. Took us to the door, opened the door, showed us the passage. At the end of the passage, there was a door. Right? He said, that door will be open. Now, I'm going to come back in an hour or so, and I'm going to give you a hell of a hiding. He went like that, and he said, don't worry, it won't hurt you. Right? And he said, now, when I say, fuck off, you Jewish bastards, etc., you get out here, at the door, and run for your bloody lives. And that's what happened. He came with a long policeman's baton, a horse.
A whip.
A whip-like, yeah. He came with that and he banged against the walls, threw a chair against the door, etc. He called, he was yelling the top of his voice, you fucking Jews, this and that and the other. And then he opened the door and made a movement with a hand, like that, and off we went. Before that, they had taken away from us our watches, our money, everything. He gave us each a handful of coins, right? And we pissed off at, right? And went there and we found the park, and we found poor Trudy, who had spent the whole night in the bushes. She was sitting there, half asleep, frozen to death. We got hold of her, and we used a few pennies that we had together, and we got onto a train, and we went to Vienna.
Now, why did he let you go? I mean, was he just a sympathiser or...?
I think so. He must have been... for him to know that tune in Austria then, wouldn't have known it unless he was a sympathiser.
So you've just been incredibly lucky.
Huh?
You've just been very lucky
yes.
indeed.
But no, it's the coincidence. I wouldn't know that unless my father had gone to Spain. I may have known it because we learned these songs also. But this song I learned from my dad.
So what happened when you got back to Vienna?
Well, when we got back to Vienna, the mother embraced me, kissed me, etc. And cried her eyes out, etc. And so, and that was it. And life went on. We went to the Jewish community had they were giving meals away, right? You went down and collected a soup or prunes, you know, stewed prunes or something, you know, things like that.
So these were soup kitchens run by the Jewish...
Yeah, by the Jewish community. When I say the Jewish community, the Jewish authority, they had their own office and went on like that until in October he contacted me again.
Now this is the friend you tried to escape with.
And he said, "Bumi, we're going to try again. If you want, you come along. I've got some equipment for you." Because what it was, they were going to be... so the winter sport, right? Go to the southern part of Austria, to the Dolomites and the border with Italy, and try to get across there,
into
pretending
Italy.
To be winter tourists, right? And he had the skis of his brother. He said, "You can have Richard's skis, etc. And we're going to try over there." And that's what you did.
So and tell me how it went there. So what exactly happened? This is in October you went, or did you go in November?
End of October. It was a very, very, very early winter. There were some snowfalls already high up in the mountains. And we went there, and unfortunately, there again, we got over there, and the Italian border guards nabbed us. But they are the difference, so that you know the difference between the fascist Italians and the democratic Swiss. These fascist Italians took us back to their frontier hut, which was heated. They set us down, right? And they gave us each a hot plate of polenta. Do you know what polenta is? Yeah? With olive oil and olives, right? And a chunk of cheese and a hot cup of coffee. And by coincidence, one of the frontier guards had a birthday. And they had a cake there. You know this Italian cake, the pontezzas, yeah? They had sliced it, and they gave us each a slice of that, I don't know. And then they told us, took us to a room, said, "Now you go to bed early," and they put some palliasses down, gave us blankets, said, "You go to bed, and you lie down there, have a good sleep, because we're going to wake you up very early in the morning." And we didn't ask any more questions. We went to bed, you know, on a full stomach and slept. Early in the morning, they woke us up, gave us a breakfast, right? And told us, "Now, we are going to take you to a deserted spot on the border where we know that the Austrian guards will not be there because they never go there. And you slip across and run for your fucking lives." That's what they did. And that's what they did. And that's what we did. And that's it. That's a thing I never forget. The Swiss and the Italian fascists. Now, some of them even spoke German, because what it is, the northern part of Italy, which the Austrians still call South Tyrol, under the Austrian Hungarian Empire, it belonged to the empire, and that it's still a German-speaking minority there, right? As a matter of fact, the towns which are now known as Merano is Meran in German, and Bolzano used to be Bolzen, right? And they spoke, some of them still spoke German, you know. And they spoke to us, and they were very, very friendly to us. And they explained to us, the reason we don't let you through is because you were noticed by another post who notified us. And we went out to grab you. So we can't deny that you're here because you were seen by another post. Otherwise, they would have been prepared to let us slip in. And so we got back again, and but unfortunately, like all things, when I came back...
So you came back to Vienna?
I came back to Vienna. Now, I then, through my mother heard about it, that there was the Jewish authorities were organizing trains going with children abroad, right, to England. And she went there, and they told I was too old and all the rest of it. And in November, I was walking with some of my comrades along a street, and one of the chaps said, "Bummy, there's a lady over there waving over here. She can't mean us because we don't know her. Have a look." And I looked across there, and there was someone I recognized immediately. Now, she was a nurse who had volunteered about 10 years before that she found me. Because I, due to our poor, you know, economic situation, I lost a lot of weight, etc., right? And my mother heard that there was a Jewish organization that was sending children from poor families on summer holidays. And she went there, and she said, and she took me along, and it was in the summer, and I was in a pair of boxer shorts and a t-shirt. And she took me in there, and these people weren't very welcoming, etc. You know, they had an onslaught. And so she said to me, "Woman, take your t-shirt off." And she said, "Look at them." You know, I was like a washboard. All my ribs could be seen, you know, because they said, "He looks all right, you know, he looks a fit little boy." And when they saw that, they said, "Okay." And they sent me away for 2 weeks.
And when was that? That was...
That was way back about in the early 30s. And they sent me away for 2 weeks. Now, on that, I was in the country, in the mountains. And there, that place was donated by a charitable rich lady for that purpose, right? And the volunteers were Jewish doctors and this nurse. And that nurse, she took a fancy to me, had curly hair. And the reason she took a fancy to me was because when I first got there, the second day I was there, I found a cherry tree, a black cherry tree on the grounds. And I climbed up there, and I remained there for the rest of the day. And by the time I finished, the whole cherry tree was empty, and around the cherry tree, it was white, because I'd spit the cherry stones out. But I was in a hell of a state, my tummy, right? And they found me, and took me back to the home, and they had to pump my stomach out. Yeah? And it took a couple of days till I recovered. And that nurse took a fancy to me and looked after me, right? And she always remembered me. Funnily enough, about 2 years later, my mother said, look, you're getting thin again. I'm going, because I put on about 5 kilos there. And I'm going to take you down there. I'm going to see if I can get you another couple of weeks. And she did. And they gave me another couple of weeks there, but in a different place. But, odd coincidence, that nurse was working there too as a volunteer. And she saw me. Right? And boy. And when she saw me on the street, she stopped me. She said, what are you doing? And I told her about my failed attempts to go abroad, and now I'm at the nonplus, don't know what's going to happen. She said, listen, she said, I'm working for that scheme, taking the children abroad. I'm on that scheme. As a matter of fact, I've just returned from a trip. I've come back from England. She had taken a trip, a group over by train and boat, and come back. Right? And they were preparing for another lot. She said, come to the, it was the headquarters of the religious community. Come there in 2 days' time and see me. And I went there, and she said, she told me, it's okay, there is a hope. I'll be able to sneak you in there. And she said, but come again. Next day. And the next day I came, and that's it. And she said, yes, okay, I'll be able to manage to sneak you in. Right? And that's how it came that I landed here on the 23rd of December 1938.
Now, you should have been too old because you were 16.
I was over 60.
So
I was too old.
What do you remember of the trip?
Pardon?
What do you remember of the train journey?
Well, the memory of the train journey, first of all, the farewell at the station. We were not allowed to kiss with our relatives. The SS were there. They said no tears and no memorable scenes for foreign journalists to take snaps of and whatnot. And then they pushed us on the train, and off we went. Now, on the train itself, there was also an experience which showed you again. We sat there, and at one stage, we were just crossing the Austrian border, what used to be the Austrian border, right, into Germany, and we were singing. And we were singing a patriotic folk song, you know, saying adieu to the homeland, yes, and we'll see you again, etc. And one of the railway personnel, a thick, fat, stupid-looking Austrian son of a bitch, came past us and said, stop singing these songs. They are not your songs. And stopped us. Now, by that time, we were in Germany, and you know what? And that's my experience. In the next carriage was already a German passport control officer, all dressed up, you know, with great big jack boots and whatnot, a tall chap. And he had observed what happened in our carriage. And he came to our carriage and he said to us, you go on singing. That was the German. He told us to go on singing. And we then saw him go after that Austrian railway guard or railway personnel, and he was talking to him, and he must have been telling him off because he did this to him.
He's wagging his finger at him.
Yeah. What? That was the farewell I had from Austria.